Chapter 41. Aaron's Arrested. Whoever uses his developed mental powers, like an escaped felon, to commit fresh atrocities as opportunity occurs, is never safe. God will arrest him. Mary Baker Eddy, 1883. Since the publication of the third edition in 1881, Science and Health had gone through two additional printings, the fourth and fifth editions. The ensuing 2 years had extracted an awful cost in Mrs. Eddy's experience, but they had also seen the sale of nearly 3,000 copies of the textbook. A very ready market had developed for the new edition, the sixth edition, revised, which was published September 21st. Gilbert Eddy's foreword, quote, to the public, end quote, was dropped from the new revision. The chapter on demonology was reduced from 46 to 13 pages, but of more importance was the addition. Mrs. Eddy had planned to add a key to the scriptures to her book nearly 7 years earlier, but constant harassment by malicious mental malpractitioners had not allowed her, quote, sufficient time to do the good she desired, end quote. The key made its first appearance in the sixth edition as a dictionary of spiritual definitions. Following the words, quote, if you substitute the spiritual signification of a term for its material definition, or the bare word, it will elucidate the meaning of the inspired writer, end quote, was a 23-page glossary of scriptural terms. Many of the spiritual definitions are identical to those in her latest revisions, but not all. An entire page is given to the definition of atonement, 3 pages to the word devil, a page to matter, and 2 pages to mind. On the 24th of September, just 3 days after the sixth edition was off the press, the lawsuit with Aaron's was decided in Mrs. Eddy's favor. With characteristic aggressiveness, Aaron's issued a statement to the Boston Globe declaring, quote, that there had been no decision whatever, and the suit was decided by an agreement signed by the respective counsel, end quote. This caused Mrs. Eddy to publish a detailed account of the proceedings in the next issue of her journal, which was published October 6th. The court's decree stated in effect that the complainant's copyrights were valid, that the defendant had infringed them, that a perpetual injunction be issued against his activities, and that he must pay the costs of the suit. The injunction served upon Aaron's on the 4th of October carried a penalty of $10,000 for failure to comply. The journal went on to state, on Friday, October 5th, 1883, fitting day one usually adopted for the execution of criminals, the infringing books to the number of 3,800 or thereabouts were put under the edge of the knife and their unlawful existence destroyed. Surely a sense of relief and rejoicing accompanied this legal victory. At last the earth was helping the woman. A vision a few days later held even greater encouragement. Vision of October 10th, 1883. Wednesday Morn. In a house in which there was a large number of my books stored, and was a great smoke and cry of fire, but I had no fear. On the 15th of April in 1891, the house burned where science and health lay on the table. The covers burned off, but not one word was disfigured or destroyed when the book was saved. Her response to the student concerned reveals how deeply this moved the leader. You may not learn through language my feelings when I took that sacred book, rescued by the divine hand from devouring flames, and through it saw the meaning of this rescue in the type before me. I have received presents from my beloved students that I prize beyond all things that I ever before possessed. But dear friend, your gift to me of my last revised science and health, saved from the fire that consumed all around it, but kindled not on its sacred pages, is a gift dearer to me than aught else this earth contains. The vision of October 10th was encouraging, but another on the following morning was a reminder that malicious mesmerism through Kennedy and Ahrens was still at work against her. This vision included her faithful secretary and recorder of many of her visions, Calvin Fry. Vision of October 11th, Thursday Morn. Thought K and A were telling me how sick I was and growing old, told me to look in the glass and see how old and sick I looked, and that I couldn't go out for the exposure would give me a cold. And Fry was with me, and he said, "How fortunate that you can hear their talk, for you aren't afraid of them now." They tried to prevent her from telling me of it by loss of memory, and made a law that if she told me, she'd suffer. Ahrens had not ceased his wicked mental practice, but his effectiveness against the Revelator was almost over. Without the truth he had pirated to lean upon, his spurious teaching of Christian Science was greatly curtailed, and his threat to its progress soon to be eliminated. If George Quimby had produced his father's manuscripts at Ahrens' trial, that issue, too, would have been settled. But the warfare against the Revelator was never out in the open. The Columinator worked in secrecy because his only power against her was in allegations and insinuations. In an effort to uncover whatever step he might be plotting next, Mrs. Eddy wrote for the December 1st journal, quote, "Answer a fool according to his folly," end quote. A part of the three-column article reads, "Since we introduced our system of metaphysical healing, or Christian Science, some 18 years ago, and taught ethics to students, we have been pursued by the envy instead of gratitude of those whom we have lifted above themselves. After years of this folly, certain ones are still at it, with fresh courage over a new fabrication. This is it, that Mrs. Eddy is not the author of what she thinks, writes, and does, but one Dr. Quimby is." The second student we taught was Richard Kennedy. He went into court and swore to the effect that he had studied mental science with us, but had learned nothing. He exhibited Mrs. Eddy's manuscripts in court to ridicule them. But since our system of healing has been fairly introduced and is in demand, he is reported as protesting with the same freedom that we are not the author of our works, but the said Quimby was. Now our manuscripts that he had held up for scorn are put on exhibition, and as somebody else's. We gave him, when a student, over 300 pages of our manuscripts, and no matter how much he denies it, he knew when we wrote them. For years before we had our works published, we distributed our manuscripts to students and left written copies of our own works with the said Dr. Quimby. Where are they at this transmigration period? Julius Dresser had stated in his letter to the newspaper that interested parties could examine Quimby's writings at his address in Boston for proof that Quimby was the originator of Christian Science. Were these some of the 300 pages she had given to Richard Kennedy? Her article continues. Another of our defamers, E.J. Ahrens, has recently been enjoined by the U.S. Circuit Court for printing our works. To our bill of complaint, he replied under oath that he had not infringed our copyright, for the original manuscripts were the said Quimby's. The case was brought to court. Here, the ringleaders had a chance to come out manfully and establish their claims, had they not been false. But because they were, not a single testimony could the defendant raise in defense of his bare-faced falsehood. And Messrs. Kennedy and Dresser, sculpt, were modestly missing. These small animals are still gnawing in the dark at a woman's reputation, telling strangers who enter our city their falsehoods, and holding on exhibition at one Mr. Julius Dresser's in Boston certain writings that read like ours, but he declares they are the said Dr. Quimby's. The son of that old gentleman says, over his own signature, that he has in Belfast, and that is not Boston, all of his father's writings. Query: why were not those manuscripts brought forward in court? The truth was that they had no evidence that they dared bring legally. To have produced either Quimby's writings or Mrs. Eddy's early writings, so liberally given to both Quimby and Kennedy, and now being attributed to Quimby for court examination, would have greatly aided the discoverer and been a death blow to Kennedy's lies. In earlier years, both George Quimby and Emma Ware had been friendly with and appreciative of Mrs. Patterson. They would no more have denounced her activities than she would have repudiated Quimby's work, had it not been for the wicked malpractice of Richard Kennedy. But under the influence of his malicious mesmerism, they had grown hostile, and now worked according to his silent bidding. Instead of bringing the disputed writings out into the open for scrutiny, they spent all their years in secreting and altering them, thus implementing the design of the false prophet to cast a doubt upon the background and the integrity of the revelator to this age. To this day, some are influenced erroneously by Kennedy's dark plot. And even among serious students, there are few with a clear understanding of the Quimby controversy.